But I do have the hopefully what will be the last installment of the internet security class that I've been walking through. Towards the end of the evening, we're going to be walking through a lot of the recommendations of what you can do to not only secure your internet, computer, mobile devices, whatnot, as far as from hackers, but also from parental standpoint, how to protect the eyes of your family. In regards to the digital age in which we live, to protect their hearts and their minds through the visual gate in which we are so blatantly bombarded today. But before I do that, some geek speak on some of the more technical aspects of security. So we've gone through several aspects of security. Tonight we'll hit wireless security. So most of us have wireless at our house, right? I mean, y'all got these things, right? Wireless, okay? So wireless security and access points. There are different ways, and I apologize. I think my slides might get a little bit bigger. There are different ways that you can identify. When you fire up your computer and you go to connect to a wireless network, there are different ways that you can identify whether that is actually a router or not. Unfortunately, in the newer version of Windows, it becomes harder to identify if it's an ad hoc network or an access point. The difference is an ad hoc is usually another computer. So you're not actually connecting to a router to get connect to the internet, you're connecting to a computer. You still might get to the internet if that computer is passing the data through onto the internet. The bad thing is that's called a man-in-the-middle attack. And all you have to do a man-in-the-middle attack is have two network accesses on your computer. So the built-in wireless plus an additional wireless card. And you can do a man-in-the-middle attack where I connect, if I'm doing the man-in-the-middle attack, John connects to my PC, forwards him out to the internet. He may have no idea that he's not connected to a router, that he's actually connected to my PC. What I'm doing, though, is I'm capturing everything he's doing, including all of his bank account information, including all of his web surfing, and whatever he does, I capture and record. And then I can go back later on and replay that and harvest data off of it. So there are different ways that you can tell, and it's this little symbol that pops up next to it. Let's see if I made these any bigger. Nope, I just made them red. Okay, so this right here, if it has a little beacon, a little symbol, that is an access point. That's a legitimate access point. It still may be, you know, depending on whether you trust it or not, maybe good or bad. But if it has like two computers, that's an ad hoc. Printers also do, a lot of times printers will do an ad hoc. So you connect to the printer so you can print. If you don't connect your printer up to the wireless network of your house, you could connect to it that way. In the more recent versions of Windows, if you see something like this, it looks like little cell bars. That is an access point, and you'll see looks like little two computers, again, communicating with each other. That, again, is an ad hoc. You do not want to connect to ad hocs unless it is yours and you know about it. You don't want to connect to them. They are not good things to connect to. What you can do, and this is eye candy, I don't really expect you to read this. What this is I did a wireless capture with a free program called Wireshark. I surfed the web myself, harvested this data out of Wireshark, and I'll show you why I'm showing this to you in a second. This can be done on any wireless access that you can get into. So you go to a hotel. Anybody at the hotel can run Wireshark on their wireless and capture all this. Okay? Right now, we have wireless network at the church. If I were to fire up Wireshark on my computer, I could Matt were to go surf the internet, I could see what Matt was surfing. Bottom line to this is make sure when you're surfing, when you're out and about and you're surfing, that you're doing stuff that you don't mind other people seeing. There are ways when you go to your bank account, you go to bankofamerica.com, wellsfargo.com, whatever it is, and it has HTTPS. Okay, that should and I say should, be secure. There are ways to harvest that credential and to unencrypt that traffic. So even that is not a guarantee. So when you're going traveling, like to a hotel, I'm sure you're saying, you know, BOQ or something, okay? When you're traveling, be very cognizant of what you're connecting to and what else is going on that network and who might have access to that network. When you're at Starbucks, be very careful on what you do when you're connecting up to a wireless access point that you don't own or you don't know the person who owns it. If it's an untrusted, unknown entity, be very cautious what you do on your internet surfing, even if it is to an HTTPS site. And the reason why I brought this up, buried down deep in here, you can see what website I went to, right? Now, if I take and I hit this, which is the very top, it's a get. There's in HTTP, there's gets and there's posts. Get is what you're pulling down. Post is what you're putting up. So you can see that I went to getcabelas.com/cabelas-en-templates-product, blah, 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 all the way down to the end. I can take this, copy it, paste it to the end of that, and that's what I get. I can actually go and recreate what the person was looking at simply by running Wireshark, which is a free program. In fact, I use Wireshark at work to be able to look inside the packets of traffic that's going back and forth. So be very careful what you see, because what you see, other people might be able to see as well. And please stop me at any time if you have any questions. Yeah. What's that? You don't know what that is? It's a stabilizer for a bow. That end right there screws into the front of a compound bow for a stabilizer. No, it's a compound bow stabilizer. So the takeaway, other people can see what you see on the network. Yes?
Tim has a question.
Yes, okay. If you hotspot it to your phone, you are much more secure, because the way the cellular network works, your phone is communicating with a cellular tower that sends the signal down into a server and across a landline. So it is much more secure. Not impossible, but you basically have to be an employee of the cell company in order to get to that data. It's a lot harder to hijack. Yes? Well, that depends. If they can get into your computer through the wireless network, which is also possible, then they could get into your computer, but your computer would have to have a back door on that. Okay. So I can take, with tools, I can discover what computers are on the wireless network. So let's say I go to Starbucks and I pull out my tools. I can actually scan the network at Starbucks and find all the computers that are attached to that wireless network and their IP addresses. I can then take another tool, scan those IPs for vulnerabilities. If one of those computers has a vulnerability, I can use that same tool. It's called Metasploit. I can use Metasploit then to craft an attack against that vulnerability and attack their computer and get a backdoor into their system. So doing Wireshark like this, no, you would only be able to see what they're web surfing. But there are ways, other tools, to be able to get into a machine. It's a little bit harder to work around, but yes, it is possible. In fact, there's a company that was famous for a while. They would do penetration testing. What they would do is they'd go in with their team to pitch their sale to the company, saying, you want us to come in and do a penetration test. One of their employees would be sitting in the back, and all he'd be doing is typing the entire time the briefing is going on, their sales pitch, their dog and pony show. At the end of the briefing, he would actually bring up the vulnerabilities that they had in that room. So if the company brought their laptops, some of the executives or whatnot brought their laptops in, he would show them the vulnerabilities on their laptops. One of the most famous things he would do is he'd hijack their BlackBerry. He'd pick the CEO and hijack his BlackBerry live as part of the demo. Yeah. Yeah, you had a question?
Yeah, when you're online banking or like private websites, they'll often tell you have to touch it or use your mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick up all those things too?
No, they would not be able to pick that up. They would only be able to pick up what is being typed in. Let me qualify that. The reason they do that is because of a piece of malware. It's called a keylogger. And a keylogger will pick up everything, every keystroke that you type, the keylogger will pick up. Keylogger will not pick up what you're typing in on the touch screen. However, if they're capturing all of your bits and bytes that are flowing, then yes, they will still get that because that's still in the packet of data that's being sent to the bank. Now, because all of those types of things are done under a port 443 HTTPS, it's encrypted, they would have to be running an attack on that to decrypt that information. Otherwise, it's just garbage to them. They'll see it, but it's, to them, it's unintelligible garbage. Right. Right. No, they do that so that way you don't have fingerprint smudges that are the same. Which, by the way, if you have PIN unlocks for your phones, make sure every once in a while you walk behind your phone and you do this number to erase your fingerprints. More than once, I've actually found a phone that somebody forgot and was able to look at it and take a wild good guess as to their PIN and unlock it simply because I saw where their fingerprints had been hitting. Or the better ones is even easier than that. The pattern swipes, because if your pattern swipe is a Z like this, I'm going to go, okay, most people aren't going to do it backwards. 99% of people are going to and unlock your phone. So just, you know, simple tricks like that, just wipe the phone, erase your fingerprints. Okay, so real quick, extra door prizes. Who can tell me what this right here is that's being loaded onto the airplane? What's that? Close. Nope. That right there is a 5 megabit hard drive. 5 meg hard drive. Let that one sink in. Okay. So, takeaways for the wireless. What can you do? Especially when you're doing anything sensitive. Banking. Anything like that. Use networks that you trust. Your own network, the network of a friend, church, something like that. Use a network you trust. Be very wary of going, or your cell phone, you know, link it to a hotspot on your cell phone. Be very wary of using Starbucks, of using, you know, Hilton's website or, you know, wireless whatnot. Be very careful hooking up to them to do sensitive data. If you're buying, you know, if you're going out surfing Cabela's for a compound bow stabilizer, I could care less whether some hacker finds out that I was surfing for a compound bow stabilizer. But do I care if he gets my bank account information? Yeah. So just be kind of knowing where you're at, aware of your surroundings, and be careful on what you trust and what you don't trust. Second point, yeah.
I have a quick question. My son's at university.
It's possible, okay. Their wireless there, their network will be doing a pretty good job on security. I'm going to take a wild guess that they're going to do a decent job on security. However, just because they are doesn't mean the student that's three doors down from him isn't running the same tools that I'm talking about on their network. Right. There again, in order to decrypt on the fly the HTTPS traffic, it's not easy. It is possible, but it is not easy. And the training to know how to do that, you either got to know a lot of stuff or be willing to pay the thousands of dollars to go get the training on how to do it. Yeah. Well, but I guarantee you the other college kids, the computer engineers, they probably have friends who know how to do it. The second takeaway, secure your own network. If you have a wireless network at your house, which I'm going to take a wild guess that all of you do, secure your own network. That way you know that other people have a harder time getting in. So if you have your network properly secured with good passwords and whatnot, the people who are sitting outside your house can't piggyback on it, therefore can't see the signals that are going through your router and can't do this kind of stuff against computers connected to your network. If you have a wireless network at your house and you have the default password, you know, admin, admin, that guy who's parked out front might be doing something a little bad. And he would be able to connect into your system, possibly backdoor your computers, read your traffic that you're sending back and forth, and do all the stuff that I've been talking about. So make sure you secure your own network. Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's basically the same thing as, you know, linking up to a hotspot on a cell phone. Yeah, Ben. Yes, that would help. MAC filtering would help. Who does not know what a MAC address is? Okay. MAC address is essentially the physical address. So you have an IP address, the Internet Protocol address, and wherever you go, that gets reassigned. Every time you connect to the network here at the church, you're probably going to have a different IP address. The MAC address is the address that is attached physically to the card on your machine. So each network interface card or each NIC has its own MAC. And each MAC address is unique. It's a 16-digit hexadecimal number. So basically meaning there's billions of combinations available. And so each card out there, my cell phone has a MAC address that this card, it's unique to this card. My computer has a MAC address that is unique to that card. I have another wireless access point in my bag that I can just plug in by USB. It has its own MAC address. Now, the reason I say it's much more secure, you can spoof MACs. So if they sniffed your network, found the MAC of a machine that is on that network, they can spoof their MAC to that MAC. So it's not a foolproof way of doing it, but it does make it more secure. And everything I'm telling you, I'll qualify everything with more secure. I will never tell you are 100% rock solid. Except for one instance, and coming up a little bit later, I will show you how you can make your computer 100% foolproof, rock solid, uncrackable. There's only one way that I know of to do it. Alrighty. So, wireless encryption. Use a strong passphrase. Home network. Passphrase. QWERTY. QWERTY. 123456. Password. These are not good passwords. Okay? Use something that's good. Not something like that. Okay? Think of something that's going to make it easier to remember. Something like this. It's obfuscated. Can you guys read that? Okay. Basically, this says security is my responsibility. I can remember security is my responsibility, but I should not use security is my responsibility as a password because I can find that in the dictionary. But you're never going to find this in the dictionary. Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is much, you're never going to find this. It's basically going to be impossible to crack it. It's going to take hours and hours and hours, and they're going to give up. But make sure it's also sufficient. I'm not sure if I put this in slides. Make sure it's sufficient in length. Because even if it's obscured like this, if it only was security, that's still not that hard to crack. They've got programs out there for like WPA, which is the best, WPA2, which right now is the top standard you can have for wireless security. There's a program called CowPaddy. And CowPaddy will actually capture the network flowing on the network. And if there's not enough traffic flowing, it could actually generate traffic on the network by causing the router to reset. and when the router resets, everything has to recommunicate to it, so it generates traffic on the network. And if the password's not good enough, even if it's obfuscated like this, with about, I think it's about 2 million packets flowing back and forth, it'll take CalPatty about 45 minutes to crack the password. So make sure it's sufficient in length to where somebody who's running CalPatty is going to just give up because it's not worth their time. Because they'd much rather go get somebody else who's, you know, easy. But yeah, obfuscate your passwords, make sure it's something good. But make sure it's something you can remember so that way you're not having to constantly go back and forth going, man, what was my password? Or, oh man, I forgot, I need to write it down. Here, let me stick it under my keyboard. Okay? I say that because I've seen it. The post-it note underneath the keyboard with the person's password on it. I've seen it. Don't do it. Okay, wireless encryption. Make sure any wireless access point you own is encrypted. Fresh out of the box, you go down and buy your Netgear or Linksys or whatever wireless access point, it's not encrypted. Make sure you have set it so where it is encrypted. You know, WPA2, as I said, is the highest standard. I don't know of any devices that are going to be on the market today that are incompatible with WPA2. The way wireless works is you have to use the lowest common denominator. So if you have something that's an old, ancient device that can't use WPA2, then you can't use WPA2 on the entire network. Like I said, I mean, WPA2 has been the standard, the industry standard, for at least 10 years. So unless your equipment is just absolutely ancient, it's going to be compatible. And yeah, WEP, that's a lot easier to crack. So if you've got it set to WEP, please change it. WEP's very easy to crack. I keep hitting the button because I've got it in my hand. Okay, practical mitigations. What can you do to protect yourself and your family? And here is the 100% surefire way to protect your computer. That's the only way to protect your computer. 100% guaranteed it will work. Computer won't work after you're done, but it'll be secure. Alrighty, first step, keep your software updated. Whether you've got a Mac or a PC, whatnot, you know, I don't know how often Macs do their updates. Windows, they call it Patch Tuesday. It's the second Tuesday of every month. So you have Patch Tuesday, and then you have Hack Wednesday. But make sure your computer is set to do the auto updates. Every once in a while, they do send out a bad update. I've seen it. I've had to deal with the aftermath of it. But 99.999999% of the time, they're not going to be a bad update. You'll want to get yourself updated. Have an antivirus software. Okay? That's the next point. Have antivirus software. Use it. Keep it updated. Run regularly scheduled scans of your system. Having a good antivirus and ever scanning your system doesn't do you any good. Have a good antivirus. Keep it updated for the most current signatures because people literally are creating thousands of viruses a day. Keep your systems updated and regularly scan your network or your systems. Secure your home wireless with the highest encryption possible. As I said, if you don't have it encrypted, the guy sitting out in the car out in front of your driveway, he can see your stuff and possibly get into your stuff. All right, lock down your computers with passwords, good passwords. Because if I can piggyback onto your wireless and you don't have a good password set up on your computer, all I have to do, I can go in through a share, because there's known hidden shares, like, you know, type your IP address /C$ or C string. That's a hidden share to the C drive. If you don't have a password set on your machine, I'm in. If you have a password set on your machine, I've got to type in your password. If it's a good password, I'm going to give up. If I've been able to crack your password, I'm in. Yeah?
What if your computer just goes to sleep and your password's not needed for you to physically open it and get back into it? Can someone
No, as long as it's password protected, they would have to have the password to get to it from the outside. Even if you're, like right now, in order for you to connect to my machine, you would have to have my password, even though my machine's up and operational. Okay. As much as possible and practical, use separate accounts for different things. I know this is not always practical. I don't do this. Okay. I live this stuff day in and day out, and I don't do this. But as much as practical, use different passwords for different systems. Nowadays, this is much easier to do with programs like KeePass, or most of your antivirus companies now will also have a password manager for you, where you can literally have a different password for every website and one master password for your password database. And when you type that master password in on your web browser, it'll automatically log you in. Kaspersky has it, Norton's got it, Trend Micro's got it. They're out there. You can download them on your Android and iOS devices to use. Yeah.
So one way that you could scramble your password and make it useful is have a very complex base and then just add the banking you go to at the very end of it.
Yep.
Or add church or whatever that's useful. That way you have a complex start, but remember the basic complex one, and then you add something to the end.
Yeah. And that's a good way of doing it. Because then you've got basically the same password, but it's a little bit different for every system. The bad thing is if that good complex base isn't complex enough and somebody finds out you've got that same basic password, then, oh, okay, well, then I just have to add B of A to the end of it, and I've got their B of A account. All I have to do is add Wells Fargo to the end of it. I got the Wells Fargo account. So make sure that base is really good. Okay, password protect all user accounts, including your children's accounts. Because all I have to do to get into your system is be able to get into one user account. Now, I may not get in with administrator privileges, but if I gain access to the system, I can then go about using other tools to elevate my privileges on that machine. So password protect all accounts. Again, use something like this. I love my wife. You're never going to figure out that that's what that is, but when you look at it, that's what it spells out. Even p@WZRD is not a good password. That's way too used, way too known. I guarantee you, anybody who's running Cain and Abel or any other low-key or any other password cracker, they're going to have that kind of stuff in there. And they're going to crack your password pretty quick. All right, protecting your family. Use parental controls. I cannot emphasize this enough. Use parental controls. Again, use parental controls. As we talked about a few times ago, the average age now that people are viewing pornography on the internet for the first time, average age, 11. 11 years old. That means, statistically speaking, just about everybody in this room has seen pornography on the internet. Statistically speaking. Almost everybody. Because I think just about everybody here, with a couple of exceptions, are over 11 years old. Use parental controls. Protect the eyes of your children. What goes in the eyes gets stored in the brain, and it's hard to get out. Almost impossible to get out. Protect the eyes of your children. Talk with your children about the risks that are out there on the internet. Have open discussions with them. I mean, you don't have to go into details, but let them know that everything on the internet is not necessarily good. Okay. Nor is it necessarily true. I mean, I heard saw on Facebook the other day that George Washington and Abraham Lincoln agreed together that everything on the internet was absolutely true. And Al Gore invented it too. So, talk with them about what's on the internet. talk with them about how some of it does not honor God. And how when we live our lives to honor God, we need to live our lives even in a digital age, even on the internet, even when we're alone behind a closed door, that we need to honor God with our fingers and our eyes. Use internet filters. This kind of falls under use the parental controls. Use an internet filter. There are a lot of them out there. I like the way some work better than others. Some are more good. I guess it's not the best English there. Some are better at their job than others. Some have more stringent controls. Some have more settings that you can apply. So play with them. Figure out which one you like. Most of them allow a full version download, trial version for like 14 days. It's not some, limited. It's a full functioning for like 14 days or 30 days or whatever it is. And you've got NetNanny, K9, MGuardian, QStudio. I mean, there's a lot of them out there. Figure out which one you like and use it. And set it up so that way you can protect your family. There's a difference between hardware and software. If you use a software solution, you've got to set it up on every device. You've got to set it up on every phone, every tablet, every PC has to have that software configured for it. If you use a hardware solution like we have in the back here and I've got at my house, then everything that connects to it uses that filter. So it should be working. And Greg, maybe this might be a good test. Maybe I'll try it this Wednesday night. Anybody who doesn't know the administrative side of the wireless network here, everybody's using the Tindle network, try using your wireless on Wednesday night. It's dead because I killed it on Wednesday nights. Sunday mornings, try going to Facebook during a sermon. Shouldn't be able to do it. If you can, please let me know and I'll fix it. Because I set that as a filter setting that you can't go do social media type stuff on Sunday mornings. I'm sorry. You should be paying attention to the pastor, not Facebook. But that applies to every device that connects through your piece of hardware. Now, hardware solutions tend to be pricier. But they are comprehensive instead of device by device. Personally, I've got both. I've got my hardware solution that every device has to connect through, and I've got more stringent controls on my own on all of my other devices. I really don't have content filters on the phones because it's just the adults that have phones. My kids don't have them, but the kids' tablets have very, very stringent controls. In fact, I keep hearing from my kids, "I can't do this." Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So since we went just to the Wi-Fi, we don't
want
to do that.
You could do what we have here at the church and I have in my house, because what it's going to do, wait a second. I'd have to think that one through, because your MiFi, you're not getting a hard line off of that, you're getting a wireless off of that. I'd have to look at it, I don't know. I'm not, off the top of my head, I'm not aware of one, but I almost guarantee they're probably there. It would just take talking to my friend Google to find it. Okay. Did I say use parental controls yet? Okay. Just checking. Sorry, kids. Parents, know your children's passwords. Whether it's to Facebook, whether it's to Skype, their computer, their tablet, I don't care what it is. Know your children's passwords. Privacy, kids, is not a right. I don't care what society tries to tell you. I don't care what the media tells you. You do not have the right to privacy on something that your parents provide for you. There's a reason you should know all your kids' passwords, and it's not just for the comfort and joy of knowing that you know their passwords. Check in on them. Make sure that if your children, how many of the kids in here have a Facebook account? Just out of curiosity. Okay, then. Well, then I'm not going to tell you to be friends with your kids on Facebook. My kids don't either. But when the day comes that they get a Facebook account, one of the requirements will be, I am a friend of yours on Facebook. Make that a requirement. If you allow your kids to have a Facebook account, whatever account, make them friend you or however you connect on that account, on that network, so that way you can see what they're doing. You can monitor what they're posting. You can, and the reason you know their password is you can get in and you can check their messages. See who's messaging with them and what they're talking about. Know what's going on in your kid's digital life. You know, I'm assuming, knowing the parents that are in this room, that you want to know what's going on in your children's lives. You know, you monitor who goes in and out of the house. You monitor who goes in and out of the bedroom. Do the same thing in the digital world. Monitor what your kids are doing in the digital world. I mean, Greg, you don't allow Jeremiah to go downstairs and play for 10 hours without ever checking on him, do you?
It is quiet.
So monitor what your kids are doing, and to do so, you need their passwords. Yeah.
Google Docs. The beloved school district has all of our children have their own Google Docs accounts that are passed out.
Okay.
Is there a way beyond around that? I know we can get their passwords and get into it, but have you heard anything or do you know anything about ways to
Well, yeah, I mean, you could block Google Docs. That's easy to do. With any internet filter. So all internet filters have the content filtering. You know, you select whether they can go to social media, whether they can go to pornography sites, whether they can go to gaming sites, whether they can go to, you know, military sites. You know, they have these categories of what's allowed and not allowed. They also have whitelisting and blacklisting. Whitelisting is, I don't care what the website is categorized as, they are allowed to go. This is a clean site, I vetted it, it's good, you're allowed to go. I don't care what it pops, what category it falls under, it's allowed. Blacklisting is the opposite. I don't care what category it falls under, it's not allowed. So all you'd have to do is use an internet filter and then blacklist Google Docs and nobody will be able to get there. So you definitely can block it. Now, as to whether that's going to work with the school district, because some teachers may require that they submit work through Google Docs. And if they require that they submit work through it, then your kids are going to have access to it to submit it. A way around that, you could block it, make them type it up in Word, and then when they're ready to submit it, you open it up, they submit it, you reblock it. That is possible. Pain in the rear, but possible. Yeah.
Just talking about that, the internet and the social media, you're saying people on our church, we don't have Facebook or whatever. The Heathens, remember Sarah?
Yep.
Daniel's daughter. Yeah. Is now a bride and a
ISIS bride. Mm-hmm.
Until it already happened. So she was already seduced and taken in and converted to Muslim and everything else over the internet while living in their homes.
Right.
So monitored, at least if they weren't able to see it or find it.
Right. And if you know your kids don't have a Facebook account, that's where you could use the internet filters to block Facebook on the devices they have access to. So even if they try to get a Facebook account, they couldn't go there because it's blocked. Which is why I'm going to go back again. Use parental controls. Okay, there's a reason I've said that over and over again. And it's because that's exactly why we need to know what's going on in our kids' digital lives. That's a perfect case example that we need to know what's happening in the digital lives of our children, because sooner or later, They will. I guarantee you, at some point in time, they will have a digital life. In fact, for those that are, you know, maybe youth group or higher and kids, you're probably going to go, yeah, some parents are going to probably hate me. I would actually encourage you, when your kids start hitting the youth group, and I probably need to set it up for my kids too, get them a Facebook account and start teaching them how to use it. Because universities today, a lot of times, won't even issue their students emails anymore. They communicate through Facebook, through Google Docs. They're using the social media world to communicate with their students. Lacey, when she went back to Boyce College, it was mandatory that she get a Facebook account. So the point there is, teach your children how to be smart on the social media before they go off to college and get their first account for the first time with no training on it. So teach them the dangers that are there. Teach them how to do it good. Teach them how to not waste hours a day posting ridiculous, stupid stuff. Teach them how to post stuff that's not going to get them into trouble, either because it's, you know, illegal, immoral, or whatnot, or because maybe it's revealing a little bit more about themselves that they really should. Don't take the picture of your prescription bottle that has personal information and post it to Facebook. Okay? I'm not sure if everybody was here, but a few lessons ago, I actually showed a website. The website, I don't know if it's still there, it made national news a few years ago. It's called pleaserobme.com. And all pleaserobme.com did was go out and kind of scrape the internet for people's social media stuff, posting about their great vacation in Maui and, you know, just landed in Maui and, you know, but every post before that was from New York. Hey, guess what? These people must be on vacation. Even simple stuff like that can show, hey, they're not home. Prime target to go get their stuff.
Wasn't Rob Gronkowski's house robbed during the Super Bowl? He's the Patriots fan.
Yeah, he was a little busy, but yeah, I think it was. So, be careful what you post out, simply because it may not be the smartest thing to put out there, and it might reveal more than you think it will. I think I've got this in here. I'll cover it now, and if I've got it later, fine, great. When you take your pictures, these things are great. They're a phone. They're a brain in a box. They're a camera that will geotag your pictures that you then put on Facebook with your exact location and time that picture was taken. So just because you don't say you're on vacation, you take that wonderful picture and then you put it on Facebook, you can get that geotagging data from it and know exactly where it was taken. Yeah. If you've turned off the geotagging on it, then it won't tag it. But for the hunters in the room, that's also a wonderful feature. When you down that moose and you take the picture of the carcass when you're done, or you take the picture, your trophy picture, and you're hunting in Area 20F that's in any bowl, and you're taking your trophy picture with your 35-inch bowl, and then you're driving through Palmer and get pulled over by a state trooper and goes, you've got a sublegal bull in your truck. Well, I took this in 20F. Prove it. Okay. Pull out your phone, show them the picture, show them on the map where the picture was taken. So for hunters out there, geotagging is a great thing. Turn it on, take your picture, turn it back off. Okay, monitor your web activity. Most of the filters out there, the internet filters, I'm not going to say all of them, most of them allow you to go back and view the history that has been viewed. Periodically go check it. Don't have to sit down with every single night and check it, but periodically check it. You may find stuff you didn't really want to know but needed to know. You might also be able to use it as a tool of guidance. Hey, look, I saw you went and looked at this. maybe not the best thing to be looking at. Or I know what you're trying to go to, and it's a fine thing to go look at, but do it this way instead, and it'll be even better. Case in point, and I'll use my son as an example here. He was trying to look at information on baby chickens. Take a guess at what he typed in as a Google search. You got it. What else is considered a chick? His Google returns were mixed. Okay? So, when he brought to my attention some of the images that were coming back on his Google search, unfortunately, I will cover this after the kids have been dismissed. Remind me. So I very graciously explained to him that chick is also slang for a female, and it would be better to search for baby chickens.
So he went to
babes? So you can use stuff like that, not necessarily as a, oh, you saw something you really shouldn't have seen, but as a training tool, how to do things better. Especially when it comes to spelling. If your kids aren't great at spelling, like I'm not, you can get in a world of trouble on the internet when you misspell a URL. I've done it. It's not a pretty sight. Oh, no, I can spell URL. That one I can spell. Good example. I was doing a research project for my marketing class when I was doing my undergrad. And we were supposed to go to three car companies, luxury car companies. Pick your car company and do a, you know, we were supposed to write a paper on their website and how they marketed their cars on their website. So I picked Mercedes, Jaguar, and Cadillac. So I'm at the house, typing up, surfing up, you know, looking at their stuff, writing up my paper. And I went to Cadillac.com. It wasn't Cadillac. And I'm looking at it going, huh? You got to be kidding me. Cadillac doesn't own their own name? Chrissy walks by behind me. She goes, Glenn, what are you looking at? I'm like, I'm trying to go to Cadillac. She goes, no. It's not two D's. It's two L's. Oh, thank you. Misspelling can get you in a world of trouble on Cadillac or on sites. For another example, WhiteHouse.com. For years, WhiteHouse.com was a porn site. WhiteHouse.gov is the real site. Number of years ago, just kind of checking out who owns it, I did a Who Is, which is a DNS registry on the internet, did a Who Is and found out that WhiteHouse.com had been purchased by the White House. I don't have any clue how many millions of dollars they paid for that to be able to own that name. So I went to WhiteHouse.com at work knowing that they've got really, really good filtering, and it redirected me to WhiteHouse.gov. 1 year later, some doofus didn't renew the registration, and it was back owned by somebody else. So the government paid millions of dollars, I know they did, to own WhiteHouse.com, and 1 year later, they didn't own it anymore because it's a yearly annual thing. All right, wireless content controls. For wireless devices, Circle, Clean Router, or the Zycel, which is what we have in the back here, it's what I have at my house. Just a few of the products. Whichever one you pick, pick one and use it. This will do a lot of your time constraints. You know, you can be on the internet from X time to X time, but not, you know, outside of those time boundaries. It'll do your internet filtering. I think you guys have Clean Router, right? And Greg, you've got Circle. I've got the Zycel. So whichever one it is, pick one and use it. Other parental control software. Here's a list of some of them. Some are better than others. Norton Family, Kaspersky. I'd be cautious on this one, as we talked about last time. The Kaspersky is based out of Russia, and the Russian government passed laws saying that any corporation that's in Russia must turn over any information requested by the Russian government to the Russian government. So all Russia has to do is walk into Kaspersky and say, give us your files on this, and they have to turn them over. So I would be leery on the software itself is awesome, but just because they're a Russian company, I'd be weary of them. And just for people who don't know, the federal government used to have Kaspersky deployed in a lot of different agencies. And as soon as Russia passed that law, we were given 48 hours to get rid of it. Kaspersky is no longer allowed on any government system, federal government. MM Guardian, this is what I use for my kids' mobile devices. It's great for Android. It's absolutely phenomenal. I don't know how well it works with iOS, simply because the way the iOS software is written, it can't embed itself as deep. With Android, it can actually go in with root privileges. So it works great on Android. I'm not sure. Did you try it on iOS?
I'm in the process of it. I had bought NetMini a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, which was a really good product for Windows, PC, and Mac, but it's horrible on iOS. Even the download it was.
Yeah.
So
okay, so each of them have their own strengths and weaknesses. I don't know. I think MM Guardian does about the same for iOS as far as internet filtering. But like for phones on an Android device, MM Guardian will let the parental side of the house see the text messages of the child side of the house. You can see what numbers were called, how long those phone numbers, phone calls lasted. You can block specific phone numbers. You can block, specific text messaging numbers and whatnot. So at least on the Android system, it works great. Google Family Link is another one that works for, I've got it on Android. I don't know how well it works on iOS. They say it does. And this is kind of a Google thing to help lock down your kids' Google accounts. So you could get your child their own Google account, but still be able to have parental controls from Google themselves on your child's account. And here again, this is one of those things, kind of like social media, email. Let your kids and encourage your kids or whatnot as they get older, as you deem they're ready for it, the use of email, teaching them how to use it. But at the same time, monitoring what they're doing, because that is another way of communication that they could get in trouble with. Some other ones, QStudio. I thought it worked pretty good for Windows. I was not very satisfied with how it worked with Android. That's why I didn't use it, because I wanted one thing that I could use kind of across both systems. And unfortunately, MM Guardian doesn't work on PCs at all. I wish it did. But because of how well it works on Android, it works really good. And if you talk with Josh Corson, talk to him about it, he threw some terms at MM Guardian that I wouldn't have even thought of to search for and to see what it did, and it blocked every one of them. So I was very, very pleased with the test. Josh and I put MM Guardian through his paces pretty heavy, and it passed with flying colors. And again, if I don't remember, remind me, and I'll try to talk about it, but I'll talk about why it passed with such flying colors later. Okay, some alibis from previous weeks. Selfies. Be careful what selfies you take or allow your children to take. Be careful what other information is being given in that selfie. Because it looks great to do it right here. What's in the background? Is the geotagging turned on? That kind of stuff. So just be careful what is being portrayed. And another thing with the selfies, especially with the social media, it's kind of designed to show your best foot forward, your best face, to show that everything is absolutely hunky-dory, happy, happy, happy all the time. I mean, you're the Papa Phil. I'm happy, happy, happy. When things really aren't. And so it really lends itself to that superficial, on Sunday mornings, how you doing? I'm doing great, thanks. Okay, see ya. How many times do you say, no, really, how are you really doing? Okay, that whole selfie image, it tends to lend itself toward everything's great, everything's going fine, when indeed it's really not. And it makes it harder to get down to the real crux of what's going on. Okay, so here is where I will pray and officially end the night. I will be going into some workarounds to watch out for. This is where, if you're in the youth group or younger, you will be evicted from the room. So this session is for adults only who want to know what to watch out for and some of the workarounds that you can do with security controls. So let me pray to end the night, and then we will dismiss youth group and under downstairs. And Greg, you've got some, you know, ping pong or something. Okay. And Greg may need a hand or two down there too. Okay, let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, as we seek to guide our families in the age in which you have placed us, we ask that you would give us wisdom. We ask that you give us insight through your word, that we would guide our families as we teach them, as we train them, that we would guide them in paths of righteousness, that we would show them how to use the tools that you have given in a manner that would be honoring and uplifting and holy to you. We ask, Lord, that you would enable us to watch over our families, to guard our families against the evils that can be presented, that are presented, and yet using the tools that you have given in a way that could further your kingdom and does further your kingdom. I ask, Lord, that you would give us that wisdom. In Jesus' name, amen. Alrighty, so some of the things to watch out for. I wanted to cover this because almost every security control, as fast as you can put it in place, there's a way to get around it. So this intent is not to try to train you how to get around security controls so you guys can do things that, you know, circumvent your own security controls. This is so you are aware and can watch out for things that might be going on and things that might be at least attempted to be circumvented in your house. I don't think I put in here, so before I forget, I'll cover the thing that I kept saying I'll cover later. Don't let me forget. Google is a great tool to search for stuff. And you can, some of the internet filters will block certain Google searches. You know, you search for Victoria's Secret. If you've got that type of a category blocked, it'll tell you, sorry, you know, we're not going to allow you to view this link. Some of them will show you the link, just kind of kill it. Some of them won't even show you the link. It'll just kind of strip it out of that of the search returns. Almost all of the internet filters that I tested did not block Google Images searching. So when you search Google Images and you hit and you're on the All tab, here, let me just do this real quick. Okay. So right here, oops, sorry. Wrong screen. There we go. Okay. So on this one, you see right here, it's on All. If you come over here and hit Images, and so you're searching the Google Images, most internet filters do not block images very efficiently at all. So while it may block Victoria's Secret to where you can't go there and it may not show it in the return, if you go to the images and search Victoria's Secret, you're going to see all the pictures of their models. So most internet filters that I saw do not block the images. That's one reason why I loved MMGuardian. The way MMGuardian works is it actually blocks all internet browsers except their proprietary browser. So if you want to search the internet, you must use MMGuardian's internet browser. Their internet browser filters even this out. So when you try to look for Victoria's Secret on the images, you don't see their models. If you search for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, you don't see the images.
Does it block VPNs?
No. It would be agnostic of VPNs unless you told it this is not allowed. So a VPN is a virtual private network. A virtual private network is to where I can connect in to a system, and then it's as if I'm resident on that site. For example, I have a VPN set up to my house. From this network here, I can connect in to my network at the house, and I will have a IP address from my house. It will be as if I am connected to my network at the house, even though I'm here at church. That's how I connect into work, because I work from home. I connect in through a VPN. So I connect into the FAA's VPN, and it's just as if I'm sitting physically in my office, even though I'm at my house. So that's what a VPN is. So and if you told it to block it, then it would, but otherwise, no. So that's the word. That's the what I would kept saying. You know, I'll get to that later, because watch out for that. Go home, give it a whirl on your system. If you've got internet filters and whatnot, give it a whirl. Go to go to Google, search for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition or whatever other thing you want to search for, and click on images and see what comes up. Yeah. Nope. You can block Google, but you can't block just the image search.
Does Google Family have any? Because I know you mentioned
Google
Family.
Nope. Not that I found. No.
So then what does it?
It doesn't really block stuff. What it does is it controls what they can and cannot do on probably does a lot of Google Docs stuff. It ties the parental account and the child account together. My guess is that I haven't tested it, but my guess is that as a parent, you could get into your child's Google Docs. Anything that requires payment, like an Android type thing, an app that they want to buy or whatnot. Anything that's tied to Google. Like, for example, all the apps on the Android devices, Android is basically a Google. It's run by the Google Play Store. So if you have an app that they want to buy, they can't do it without your permission. You can lock stuff like that down. So it's not so much of an internet filter as it's a parental control on what can be done on the device. And what can be, or not necessarily device, what can be done with that account. Email, apps, whatever is attached to that Google account.
But if they just went into Google and didn't attach to their account,
then it would just be a straight up Google search. Yeah. Oh, it's scary what they see. It's scary. So here are some of the common bypasses to watch out for. Okay, so specifically on Android devices, you can do a guest account. So instead of passing this around, I'm going to give this a test. I tested it at the house, and it worked pretty decent. I'm going to see what happens here. Come on. Let's see. Alrighty, that's my phone right now. That's probably not going to work too well. All right, you see those three right there? Glenn, Timothy, and Guest? That's a feature specifically on Samsung Android devices. If I hit that guest right there, I've just entered a new account that unless you've installed parental control features on, it's got nothing there. It's clean out. There's no software controls on it at all. That's a nice feature that Google put, that Samsung put in there that I'm not really appreciative of. And I've had mixed results with going through and getting rid of that. And to get rid of it, you basically have to be a computer programmer. And it still did not turn out 100% the way I like. So just be aware. And I found this one because my kids found it. I was unaware of it until I caught what they did. Because they were going to YouTube when they shouldn't have been able to go to YouTube. And I asked them, how are you going to YouTube? I blocked that. Oh, we just did this. Nice. Thanks. So, needless to say, they got blocked. So guest accounts, at least on some, I don't know if it's on all, but at least on some Android devices. So, check your devices to see if you have Android. I don't think Mac has that ability, the iOS. I'm not positive. But check to see if your device has the ability to do a guest account. How you get to it, at least in my version of the software, is you just simply swipe down, and it's got a little face up there. Here, let's see if I can show you better on this one. In fact, you can just get to it from here, too. Just boink. Glenn and Timothy. I can switch accounts on the device just from right there. So just check to see if they have access to it. There are ways, and this is one of the things I liked about Google Family. This is one of the things you can block with Google Family is whether that child's account is allowed to see or use the guest account. And that's one of the reasons I linked the Google Family accounts up. So just be aware of that. Check to see if your devices allow it. As I said, it allows it clean through with no restrictions on the device. Now, if you've got hardware solutions, a hardware router, clean router, circle, something like that, it doesn't bypass that. It just bypasses the controls on the device itself. YouTube.
Real quick.
Yeah.
What incognito mode?
Incognito mode. Short of going into like the Windows registry, you can block incognito mode. They do it at work. But short of going into the Windows registry, I don't know of a way of blocking incognito mode. For those who don't know, incognito is on most web browsers. I don't know if Internet Explorer has it or not. I know Chrome has it, Firefox has it. Private browser. What it does is it will not circumvent the filters that you have in place, but what is visited, the history of it, is destroyed when they exit. Unless you have some other external type of logging. If your internet, circle, if it logs it, okay, clean router, they'll still have it, but it won't be on the device. Right, it won't be on the history of the device. That's one reason why I love MM Guardian. With MM Guardian, I've gone back over a month and saw every single internet page that was viewed through the MM Guardian's history. So regardless of the browser history, when I go in on my parental side of MM Guardian, I can go back and look at each child and every web page they visited and see what they saw. Yeah, Tim? I don't know. I didn't play with Qstudio that much. Right.
You can still see what they're doing and you can still control it.
Right, and that's true of every parental type software that's installed on the device. It doesn't matter where they're connected. It doesn't matter whether they're on the cellular network or a wireless network. If it's on the device itself, then it's going to be working on that device. Okay. We'll probably punch through that. We'll find out. YouTube, full screen bypass. So if you go on YouTube and you search for something, YouTube unfortunately does not block nudity. Nudity on YouTube must be in a art form or medical type stuff. Like, so if you went on YouTube and searched, yeah, we got no kids. If you did, like, had to do a breast exam, you might find videos of actual breast exams done live on video, okay, with full nudity shown. You have to be over 18. You have to log in with your account, but it's still there. There are ways around that. One of the ways around that is to view a video in full screen mode. And when you get to the end of the video, it always pops up, you know, those, like, you know, 9 or 12 or whatever, you know, suggested videos to watch next. If you click on one of those, it bypasses all requirements of signing in. So you could go from video to video to video to video and eventually get to one that you would have to be over 18 and sign in for without signing in. So it is possible to just link from video to video to video and get somewhere that YouTube would normally not allow you to go unless you were signed in. Now, the downside of that is, who verifies you're over 18 at YouTube when you sign up for an account? Nobody. So just because it says, are you over 18, you can hit that little checkbox and lie about your age and you've got a YouTube account. So there again, monitor your kids' accounts. Google Cache. This is another one. When you do a Google search, there is a little part. Where's my mouse? Mousey. Okay, there's my mouse. There it is. All right, so if I come up here and I hit this little drop down, cached, I will more than likely see what that web page used to look like an iteration or two ago. That does not necessarily caught by all internet filters. So you could go do a Google search for Playboy, and instead of hitting the link, go to the cache and actually see their front screen. Whatever was on their main page is what you would see. So that one right there, that's what was cached as of March 4th. On speed test, which is a speed thing to see how fast your internet link is. And that works for a lot of web pages. And I don't know if all of the internet filters catch it. Some might not. Something to test out to see if yours does. No. That's what was up on that website's server. Yep. Or it's simply what Google saw on, in this case, on March 4th, this is what Google saw. So it's on. So you could go to on the cache, and it's going to be pulling it up off of Google's servers, not off of your drive. Which just, you know, for your own information, if it was ever out on the internet, it's still out on the internet. As part of a test at work, I was going through a class and we were supposed to go out and find archived internet pages. And I went to Fridge and North, the communications company down on, was it Spinard, I think? And I pulled up their web page from 10 years ago. And I could still view their web page that they had 10 years prior to that test. It was an awful web page, by the way. But just because you have pulled it off the internet doesn't mean it's off the internet. Nope, because you're not actually pulling the cache off of your machine. You're pulling the cache off the Google server. You're going out to Google, and you're pulling the images off of Google, just as if you were to... Yeah, you know, well, I'm not sure if Bing does a cache. I'm assuming they do. You know, whatever search engine you're using, if they offer a cache, you're pulling it off of that search engine's servers. Right. It could be, it depends on how often it was refreshed. It could be a day old, a month old, a year old, or just a few minutes old. It's whatever is off of that server. Oh yeah, once it's out there, it's out there. You know, whatever what happens in Las Vegas stays on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. It doesn't ever go away. Yeah, oh, 5 minutes? Alrighty. Key phrase searching that will bypass filters. So this would be like, and here's a couple that Josh Corson threw at me that I didn't even realize. Naturist. A naturist is another term for a nudist, like a nudity colony. Okay? Watch for stuff like that. Stuff that, you know, chicks. Are you looking for baby chickens or girls? Okay? Stuff like that. Watch for other terms that could be searched for that could have alternate meanings. So just because, you know, they're not, you know, may not see something doesn't necessarily mean it's not there. Applications that conceal actions, specifically on mobile devices, phones and tablets. Snapchat is a very famous one. Snapchat is a program, for those who don't know, that will allow you to send text messages or pictures or whatnot that is encrypted from like if I were to send John a Snapchat, it would be encrypted from his device to mine, so no other device could see it. I could set it to self-destruct, to self-delete within 5 minutes, whatever. I could set it to where he's the only one who can see it and he can't forward it and self-destruct in 5 minutes. So years ago, when sexting was a big deal in the schools, this is a lot of how sexting was done. Kids would take pictures of themselves that shouldn't be taken, and they'd send it to their friends on Snapchat because they knew they could set it to self-destruct in 5 minutes. And so other people could see it. The one thing I don't think Snapchat ever blocked was this. Screenshot it. Forward screenshot. So just because you think it's going to be, you know, deleted or blocked or whatnot doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be deleted and blocked. And I guarantee you it didn't stop this one. Hey, give me your phone real quick. I guarantee you it didn't block that one. So beware of applications that are designed to conceal what is being done. Typically, if the